Okay, it is October 26, 2024, Bridgeport, Connecticut, Bridgeport History Center. Interviewee is Michael Arujo, being interviewed by Jamie Pettit. All right, so tell us a bit about yourself, Michael. Where and when were you born?
So I was born in technically Livingston, New Jersey, was the hospital, but I was kind of grew up in, still currently live in North Arlington, New Jersey, in kind of a Portuguese kind of ethnic enclave in North Jersey. To kind of immigrant parents in 1998, so 26.
Nice. So what was it like growing up in Jersey?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. it was interesting, like growing up in specifically kind of an enclave, but I mean, all of North Jersey and then kind of the Northeast is just kind of different, like dense little enclaves.
Yeah.
I grew up kind of in this community, both with my family, but then that all lived kind of in the same area, but also with the kind of like ethnic community that all lived in the same area. And we had the Portuguese club and we had the religious festivals and the parties, like even for like New Year's, even for kind of normal American stuff. Like for like Halloween, they would have a Halloween party, and New Year's Eve, we would like always spend New Year's Eve when I was a kid at the club with the family and all the other like kind of kids that were in the area. I have like very vivid memories of like weekends on like Saturdays. Saturday was whenever the club would have lunch, like they would serve lunch. So my dad and all the like the male relatives of the family would always go to the club to just kind of like fuck around, watch a soccer game, drink, eat, and they would always bring the kids along, and they would have a pool table. There was like another kind of separate room that had a pool table that was actually quarter operated. And we would like beg our parents, like me and my cousins. We just beg our parents for quarters, and we just spend like hours and hours and hours and hours of the day playing pool, just like all day, while our dads were just kind of like hanging out at the bar, just kind of like chilling, and we just spend like all the day playing pool.
That's so fun.
Yeah, and that would be like every other Sunday, Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and still today they do those like dinners. My dad's probably there right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a very close-knit community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very active. Yeah. And what do your folks do?
My dad was was because he retired, but he was a union construction worker. I mean, when he first came to the U.S. when he was 17, so sometime in the 80s, he came over. He worked at a fishery, like a fish cannery, actually. Canning fish in Newark, and then he got into construction and then got into the union once he was a citizen. I think he got into the union, and then from there he's like he kind of spent his life as a local 472 general labor union in Ironbound, Newark, working construction. Which is the same thing on my mother's side. On my mother's side, my grandparents immigrated to Jersey, also basically to the same area. They immigrated to North Arlington, which is very close to Newark, and they did. My grandfather always did construction. Him and his family actually owned a construction company for like a tiny bit.
Wow.
Before they were like, oh, actually, this is, at least this is the way I understand it. It became like either too much work or it wasn't worth it. And my grandfather actually entered the union. Yeah.
Really?
And And my grandmother, when she first came, actually, I just found this out recently. I was asking my grandmother this, like, literally, like, a couple days ago. Because she first started in the electronics factory in Harrison. And I was like, what factory in Harrison were you in? Because there used to be a famous factory in Harrison. Of course, all these factories don't exist anymore. There aren't any factories in Harrison anymore.
Yeah.
But there was one famous factory for RCA, the Radio Corporation of America, which is like one of those like big famous companies that no longer exists, you know? I asked her and she was like, oh yeah, it was for RCA, like basic, like making like pieces of electronics, like whether it's like vacuum tubes for television, stuff like that.
Wow.
But my grandfather was like, told her to basically come back home because, this is the 80s. He needed somebody to take care of, you know, somebody right. home to take care of the kids.
Right.
This is a very
traditional.
Very traditional, conservative type family unit. Yeah. Even though it was an attempt at a traditional family unit, she still needed to work because we were still quite poor.
Right.
So my grandmother actually ended up working for the garment district in New York.
Really?
Which used to exist, as a place for like low wage factory work. So my grandmother would go into the cities on Saturdays. We drive into the cities to the garment district. I even asked her and she was like, oh yeah, like this street. I forget the exact street in New York. But to the garment district, I think in the 40s. Don't quote me. But pick up fabric, the garment boss or whatever would be like, sew these things. She would take the garments home and throughout the week on like an old, Singer sewing machine that's still downstairs actually in the house.
Oh.
Sew up all the pieces of clothing and then the next Saturday bring those pieces of clothing back, and she'd bring my mom with her as well, and basically sell them back piecemeal. Like she would get paid piecemeal for, which like, you know, of course none of that right. exists anymore. But yeah, that's like, I mean, but it's crazy. It was like so recently.
Yeah.
Like this was the 80s. This was the 80s. This was like very recently.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, like, so all of your family Portuguese immigrants?
Yeah, yeah. On all of them, basically to New Jersey.
Oh.
I have a couple I do know of some like more distant, or like at least distant in the sense that we don't talk to them as much. Not for any reason, but just like, you know, we just kind of don't talk to them as much. That I actually did go to like Providence and stuff.
Oh.
But kind of a separate population of Portuguese people.
Yeah.
But most of them came to New Jersey. On my mother's side, on my father's side, almost the entire family is still in Portugal.
Okay. And where in Portugal is your family from?
So on my father's side, all my family are from northern Portugal, to be exact, Refoios de Lima, which is near Ponte Lima, which is the nearest kind of regional city, which is near Viana, which is like the big regional capital for the province. Like furthest north province, like Minhotuj, like really north. My grandmother on my mother's side is also from that area. She's from Viana do Castelo, but when she married my grandfather, my grandfather on my mother's side is actually from Viseu. So that's the center of Portugal, like completely different part of Portugal. Central near Viseu, from a town, from a village called Quinta do Ponte, which is near Bernardo Castelo, which is near Viseu, with the big kind of like central like regional capital. So center and then north, but mainly north.
Okay.
And that's usually where a large proportion of the Portuguese in New Jersey are from. Like in North Jersey are from. They're all most of them are from the north. There's literal clubs where called like the club of like Arcos or whatever, where the club is made up of people that all immigrated from the exact same town.
Oh really?
Yeah, like they're all from Arcos de Valdevez. Oh. They're all from the exact same town. There's one club that's Ponte Barca, which is just another town that they all moved from.
So they were just still like, we're gonna get out of here.
Yeah, but like they're all like, they're like, oh yeah, but we're still gonna basically like be neighbors. Like we were neighbors in Portugal. We're going to be neighbors in the U.S. There's a there's a cafe called Arcouge in Kearney, New Jersey, where it's called Arcouge because it's like, it's people from Arcouge de Valdevege. And these are all the same towns along the river that my father's from. Like it's Ponta Lima, then it's Arcouge de Valdevege, then it's Ponta Barca. So it's like all one big line, and they all came to the U.S. all to Newark, like all to that same area. Yeah, it's so much so that I was like walking around in Ponta Lima, which is like the local like kind of regional big city. And my dad like was walking by, and he sees a person. He says hi to him. This is in Portugal, and I like asked my dad like, how do you know that guy? Why are you talking to him in English? And he was like, oh, like I worked construction with that guy. like he did the same thing as I did, where he retired, got a union pension, and moved back to Portugal. Oh. Like that's like the classic arc.
That's the classic. Yeah, arc.
That's the arc.
Are you planning to do that?
I mean, I kinda, yeah. Because we have the house over there. My dad kind of lives there now.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's back and forth, but he spends more time there now because he's retired, and that's where he grew up and all that stuff, and where all the family is.
Yeah.
And now my grandmother's getting older, so he kind of has to be over there to support and all that stuff. Mm. But he was like, "Oh yeah, like you're an only child, so it's like you're getting the house." You know, it's like, this is gonna be your house.
Oh, that's so sick.
You know, so it's like, it was like he was like, whenever I make decisions about the house, it's like, it's with the understanding this is gonna also be your house and stuff. And it's just like, it's cool because it's like the family house. It's like his grandparents, my grandparents, the house he grew up in. It'll hopefully it'll continue being like it kind of still in the family.
Oh, that's so cool. Best of luck to you when you
Yeah, thank you.
How does you feel about the American tourists? Have they come to that region yet? Or?
So that's the thing. We're like very far in the north.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the tourism is actually French. But it's like French emigres coming back. Like it's a lot. The other big percentage of people that left that portion of Portugal, instead of going to Newark, went to various places in France. A lot of like French immigrants, like Portuguese immigrants to France that come back and like visit family, but also just are tourists, you know?
Yeah.
So that's like mainly the big tourism thing there. Mm. So like, and it's not close to Porto or Lisboa. So it's thankfully it kind of is a little isolated from, the only way you can kind of you have to take a car, you have to drive there or take the bus there or something. Like, there's no like normal way of there's no like public kind of touristy way of getting there.
Right. No trolleys.
No. Which is funnily enough, it's like thinks it like kind of saves it. Yeah. It's I really wish there was like a really easy way of getting there by train, but there isn't. But it kind of saves it. So, yeah. I mean, it's sad. It really is sad. I mean, what's happened and is happening to Porto and Lisbon they're like heartbreaking. Like, I remember going to Porto and Lisbon as a kid, and it's just like a different city. Like, now I go.
It's just swamped with tourists.
Yeah. I mean, it's Disneyland.
Yeah.
It's like Disney. It's Epcot.
Yeah.
You know, I like go around and I don't hear people speaking Portuguese. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
It's really crazy. And I mean, it's fueling a lot of like very unhealthy politics in Portugal.
Yeah.
With housing prices and stuff.
Yeah.
And then a lot of that gets blamed on immigrants to Portugal. I mean, it's fueling like really bad politics. But I mean, it's kind of part of a broader like right-wing turn all across the world.
Yeah.
And especially in Europe. In Europe, things are getting kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's scary. Speaking of European fascism.
Yeah.
Why did your family come here?
I mean, work, like, really work.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's after... I mean, Salazar kept Portugal in, like, a semi-feudal, like, peasant state. Like, my family were, on my family and on my father's side were literal, like, doing subsistence farming until the 1970s.
Oh, my God.
My grandfather had to, like, illegally escape Portugal to go to France to work construction and send money back to support my grandmother and my father. And then once the dictatorship fell, thank goodness, Portugal realized, like, holy shit, we have a pre-industrial economy and we were in Western Europe. Mm-hmm. There was no economy before. And now they first realized that there wasn't an economy.
Right.
And no more money coming from the colonies to support the government. I mean, because that money from the colonies wasn't going to like normal Portuguese people, because Salazar was like personally keeping kind of like a like colonial Williamsburg-esque feudal LARP. You know, he was keeping this, like, I mean, it's this kind of like trad LARP fantasy world of where everyone can be this subsistence farmer, like medieval stuff in 1970s Europe.
Right, it's like Pedro and the Neige kind of romanticism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then it's like, holy shit, no, like, we can't pay for, there's no way of eating. So already there was like mass immigration out of Portugal before Salazar, but once Portugal opened up, there was an even more mass immigration after. And my dad was in that kind of wave of mass immigration out of Portugal looking for work. And now, actually, I literally had this conversation with my dad yesterday. He was like, "Oh, if I grew up in Portugal now, I wouldn't have to come to the U.S." He frames it like that, like he wouldn't have to come to the U.S. He's kind of eternally upset that he had to do this, like he had to leave his country to work somewhere else. I mean, nobody wants to. Nobody wants to, like, leave their country to find work. Nobody wants to have to settle somewhere they don't know in a place they don't speak the language. But yeah, he's like, now I can get a factory job in Portugal. Because now Portugal is, like, currently industrializing. at least the parts that aren't, like, mainly tourism economy, which is, of course, like, low-wage kind of bullshit work. But yeah, he's like, oh, if I were born now, I wouldn't have to move to the U.S. So mainly work. Same thing with my grandparents on my mother's side. They came for work. I mean, it's a place, like, they always knew the U.S. as a place where there was a lot of jobs, which is true. I mean, still, yeah, like, still today, the U.S. is a place people go to because there's a lot of work to do. And you get paid basically the most anywhere in the world to do that work. So this is the place to go. I mean, to support family back home, it's why everyone moves to the U.S., you know?
No, definitely. All right, so we're going to circle back and just finish up the basics here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, political and religious affiliation?
My family are kind of normal Portuguese Catholics in the sense that they go through all the required stuff, you know, like baptism, married in the church, at least the first time they get married.
Right.
You know, make sure that they get their kids confirmed, yada, yada, yada. And we're from the north, which is the most religious part of Portugal.
Oh.
The north is highly religious. So, you know, but like my family were kind of like, they were like Christmas and Easter, kind of mass attendance, stuff like that. As with politics, my mom had very suburban politics, just kind of moderate, not kind of non-political, just moderate. Mm-hmm. And then my dad always had the kind of strangest politics because he had like kind of union politics. Mm-hmm. But also, I think being kind of a white ethnic in the U.S. has this kind of like instills in you this kind of like bootstraps type mentality that always kind of politically comes out very strange. Yeah. But I mean, in general, like, my dad hates Salazar because he personally sees Salazar as the reason he had to move to the U.S.
Right.
Like, look at what he did to my beautiful country.
Right. Understandable.
Yeah, and he has like union politics, but yeah. Because he's from the north, he has like he's quite, even though he's not religious, he's quite like socially conservative.
Right.
So it always ends up kind of being very, kind of very strange politics. Mm.
And how about you yourself, if you're comfortable answering?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm like politically very leftist. Mm-hmm. I'm religious. Mm-hmm. I'm Catholic. And I'm quite leftist. Like not like Democrat, but like
yeah.
as in like
yeah, socialist.
Yeah, like Marxist yeah. and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. All right, and then I just got two more questions for the biographical
yeah
stuff. Okay, so where did you go to school, education?
So this is where Bridgeport comes in.
Oh yeah.
I grew up very parochially mm-hmm. you know, like I went to like the church that I was baptized in. I went to its Catholic grammar school, mm-hmm. to its Catholic high school. Of course, the grammar school still exists, but the Catholic high school does not exist anymore. I mean, classic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Sacred Heart University in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Really?
And that's how the only 4 years I didn't live in North Arlington, New Jersey. I lived in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and that's how I kind of ended up in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I went there because I was able to. It was between Seton Hall University, which is in West Orange, New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
Sacred Heart, and I kind of got them in a little bit of a bidding war. So I was able to get them. I was able to get like a pretty good scholarship to come to. To come to Sacred Heart.
Oh, that's great.
And at the time, I was thinking of going into, like, doing something medical, which I didn't end up doing. But, yeah. And Sacred Heart's, like, kind of known for yeah. being nurse PT, OT, or pre-med.
Yeah, no, it's a really good school for that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, everyone.
Yeah.
Literally, I was in the elevator. I was at work, and I was in the elevator, and somebody turns. So, they were on one of the quarterly power plant meetings. They introduce all the new hires, which is it's like insanely embarrassing because
yeah.
they like, it's just like the technical managers like kind of bragging about you to like, just like a bunch of like basically like construction workers. It's very embarrassing. Yeah. But, he goes like, he like mentioned the school I went to, and this is months after, a coworker turns to me and goes, you're the one that went to, Sacred Heart University. My daughter went to Sacred Heart University, and I go, oh, that's cool. That's interesting. Was it PT, OT, or nursing? That's like my canned response to anybody who's even mentioned Sacred Heart University is it PT, OT, or nursing? And he goes, oh, yeah, PT, physical therapy. it is what I have, like, 100%, hitting average with that one. Like, I get 100% of the people.
Oh.
Like, everyone.
All right, that's a big, big PT nursing school.
Yeah, like, everyone.
Wow. Okay, and what's your professional background?
At the time I was an EMT, which is why I thought I was going to do something medical.
Right.
Turns out I actually hate all that stuff. All that stuff sucks.
Yeah.
So then after I kind of got I was like first doing biology at Sacred Heart, and I was like, actually, I'm like fine. I like biology, but it's like, whatever. I was like, I'm probably not going to be doing this. So I probably need to like diversify this a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I did biochemistry. And because I did biochemistry, I ended up moving back to Jersey and getting a pharmaceutical manufacturing job. Because in Jersey, one of the big manufacturing one of the big manufacturing sectors in North Jersey is and Central Jersey is pharmaceutical manufacturing. Like all the big pharmaceutical companies are there. So I worked in two different kind of drug factories. Basically, first job working the line, I was just an operator. I just worked the kind of assembly line, basically, for Bristol Myers Squibb. And then I left for a higher paying job at a different facility, a company called Minaris, where I worked quality control for, like, no joke, like 2-3 months before they laid me off because the company was, like, doing really badly.
Oh my gosh.
And then, but like, think. But thank goodness, because I ended up with a much better job where, because I had a chemistry related degree, I ended up getting a job as a union, like utility workers Union of America, local 1-2 union job for Con Edison at the steam and power plant in Manhattan, actually.
Oh wow!
So now I have that. Now I that's what I do, and probably will do for most likely for the rest of my life, because it's like, you know, it's a pension job, union pension job, and all that stuff.
All right. So you actually answered the first Bridgeport related question, which was why Bridgeport? What made you come here? So Sacred Heart, great school. So where did you live initially? What was the general area?
So initially I lived in the, the first 2 years I dormed at their like off campus dorms, which, the first one was, Roncalli Hall. It's the school. Have you ever heard about the founding of the school?
No.
It's founded off Vatican II ideals. They have like the history of like the first school founded off Vatican II ideals, where it's like the first like lay run, like Catholic lay run university in American history.
Really?
They were the first like Catholic university or something like that, to have like, they like have like a special thing of like Jewish Catholic dialogue. Like every single dorm is like the dead name of a, of like a Vatican II pope, like Roncalli, I think is John the 23rd or something. Yeah,
that's so cool. Sacred Heart, now that I think about it, like totally fits that vibe though. It's very,
yeah,
Vatican II,
yeah,
influence. Yeah,
but yeah, it was which that was on, can I pull out a map actually, like,
yeah,
a little like map of the,
yeah,
it'll like set, give me a better. Yeah, so that was actually right on Park Ave. So that was right on Park Ave, like above the golf course, and like that the like disc golf thing, like next to the Discovery Museum.
Oh.
Yeah, it was right there. It was one of the really big kind of towers, like kind of classic 70s towers, like all brick and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I had a friend of mine on the, she lived on the 10th floor. It was like 10th or 11th floor, where from the top you can actually see across the Long Island Sound. She was able to see Long Island from the top floor.
Oh, that's very cool.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like on like a, on a good day, like on a bright good day, she could see Long Island from the top of the building.
That's.
And then after that, so that was for a year. And then after that, it was, I lived in a, like, a little complex, Pioneer Gardens, which is, like, the most, like, university-ass, name for a dorming complex ever. But that was on the corner of Madison Ave and Eckert Street. But so, like, kind of very north Madison Ave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not too far from the mall, but, like, but also like very kind of close to Main Street, like pretty like easy to get to Main Street from there. So like very close to there. And then after that, I moved like much further south actually. So Then I rented an apartment, like a house actually, with it was like me and another roommate of ours, like a friend of mine, moved down. We rented a place in it was right off of Main Street on Westfield Ave, actually, but like right off of Main Street, like pretty close to the hospital, pretty close to St. Vincent's. But yeah, like right Westfield Ave, very very easy drive to work. So then I would just, I had my car at that point, so I'd just drive to school from Westfield Ave. And a really nice, it was like very cheap rent, and it was like such a nice place. It's the old Victorian house, like gorgeous hardwood floor, beautiful like kind of beautiful like living kind of family room. They still had a root cellar. That's actually where the laundry units were. It was in the root cellar, but like still like earthen basement. Like root cellar.
Oh wow.
Which meant, of course, since it's Bridgeport, whenever it rained, like more than whenever it rained for more than an hour, of course, like everything flooded.
Oh my!
But like, and it was earthen, so it's like, so it would constantly flood in the basement.
Oh my god, that sounds like such a nightmare.
Yeah. So the laundry units are actually on like on pallets, like stacked up on pallets. So when it floods, the washing machines wouldn't get wet, but they would be like further in, so you kind of had to like jump to get to the.
Oh,
it was like really.
They're just like, you gotta work for it.
Yeah, it was quite absurd. Yeah. But really, it was like such a beautiful house. Of course, like it had this kind of like semi wraparound porch that was just gorgeous. I mean, really beautiful, and it was just that thing about the old Victorian houses. You know, they were built pre air conditioning. So they were like, you know, they're built to be in Bridgeport. You know, they were built for the climate. And you can really tell, like, they get very cold in the winter. But I love the cold, so I'm fine with that. And they have, like, those old classic radiators where if you turn them on for even a little bit, your house will become, like 90 degrees. Like, it just becomes, like, so unbearably hot if you turn them on for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then you turn them off, and then they're, like, still hot for, like, ever. But during the summer, I would be, like, I wouldn't have to turn on the AC. Like, I would very little would I ever have to turn on the AC.
Hmm.
Because all the windows would be stepped back because of the porch. So you would never get direct sun into the house, which of course is the point of the porch, the point of awnings and porches, which of course no modern house has, because now it's like, we'll destroy the environment by just running ACs 24 hours. But it's like, you know, the awning and the porches were supposed to, where you still had a view, but it kept it, you know, it kept the direct sun outside of the house. And it was all tree lined, really gorgeous street with these big old trees right in the front yard. So it was shaded the entire day. Like there was very few times when you would get direct sunlight into the house, which I loved. You would only get it in the morning when you really needed it. You know, when it's like you can open the blinds, get some direct sun. But it's like in the middle of the day, you don't want that.
Right.
So it stayed so cool. Like sometimes you just have to turn on the AC just to get a little bit of the humidity out. But like besides that, it was like really nice, and also, you know, I really love the neighborhood. I actually really did love the neighborhood. I mean, I never had any issues living on Westfield and Madison. And you can tell it was like a real working class neighborhood. I didn't know this until I showed up, that there was like a heavy Brazilian immigrant population in Bridgeport. I only found out because I just was like living with them after. Because my like neighbors were Brazilian. They were great people.
Yeah.
And on like Saturdays and Sundays, I would get the Jehovah's Witnesses knocking at the door.
Jehovah's Jesus, really?
Yeah, and of course, like, a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses are Brazilian. That's like a heavy Brazilian Jehovah's Witness population. There's actually a Jehovah's Witness hall right on Main Street that I would always pass driving, right next to the gas station, and they somehow found out I was Portuguese. I have no clue how they do these things. But, like, I would always have a conversation with them in Portuguese, and it would just be, like, a fun little treat, where I'd, like, be able to have just, like, this kind of, like, fun little convo. Of course, like, there are very little to talk about, but, like,
right,
you know, it was, like, funny. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I would talk with the neighbors and stuff, mm-hmm. and they were, like, yeah, they were, like, Brazilian. They would always be sitting out on the porch and stuff. It was, like, really, it was very pleasant. Yes. It was a very pleasant time.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you found, like, such a welcoming
community. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm assuming your first impressions of the city were pretty good then, right?
Yeah. It's crazy because the first impression of the city is the fact that you say the word Bridgeport and, like, every white person... every middle class white person acts like you just like insulted them, like they like you know like yeah. they like say you say the word Bridgeport, and that's not to I'm like not saying that there isn't real poverty in Bridgeport, which there is, right. Or there aren't kind of tough neighborhoods of Bridgeport, which of course there are. That would be, you know, saying something like that would be kind of devaluing like people's real tough situation that they do have here. But of course, the way like kind of a middle class white person understands those kinds of issues is of course like psychotic.
Yeah.
They talk about it as if you're going to be like you're driving into like 70s New York.
Right.
You know, like which of course, you know, like it like. It's based off of something, but it's like so suburban exaggerated. Yeah. It's crazy.
No, it definitely the city definitely gets like, you know, an excessively bad rap, and I think that's mostly just because of like what was going down in the 80s with the political corruption and like a mob hits. So no, it's definitely like, yeah, it's definitely just stigmatized, I think.
Yeah. So I was expecting like kind of crazy, right. But like, I mean, I grew up in Jersey, in like like places like Irvington and Newark. I would spend a lot of time as a kid, and of course Newark had some like very rough neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and a lot of worse poverty in Newark than in Bridgeport, I would even say, just kind of based off of what I've experienced. Mm-hmm. But like I've always seen that as a kid, the kind of like suburban white, mm-hmm. Kind of like exaggeration, mm-hmm. of that kind of thing. I mean, it's both exaggeration and kind of also like victim blaming, like the right. real victims of poverty in places like Bridgeport and you know, like Bridgeport in Newark, of course, aren't like the white suburbanites. They're like the mainly minority populations that are living in the city. Like those are the people that have the most to fear from poverty and crime in those cities. It isn't mm-hmm. like the like white ethnic that's coming in, you know? Okay. But yeah, I quite enjoyed my time in Bridgeport and this whole kind of area, really.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. So, you mentioned before, so you're working as an EMT here. Right?
No, so in Jersey, I was working as an EMT.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. But, yeah, here, I, like, did some volunteer stuff, but I was mainly a EMT in Jersey.
Okay.
But yeah, yeah.
Okay. So what volunteer stuff were you doing?
It was mainly through the university. They would, like, be, like, little projects, like there were like a day where we went to the Jewish retirement center, helped out there. There's like a food kitchen that we were helping out with. I forget where. It was somewhere downtown, but I forget where. It was like through a I believe like a Methodist church down there. But But yeah, like kind of like just like small projects like that.
Okay. That's fun. Giving back to the community. That's cool. So you did mention you were interacting with the Brazilian community. Did you interact at all with the Portuguese community here?
Honestly, not. So I wasn't, I was in like, never in a purposeful way, but I did actually end up interacting with the Portuguese community in kind of inadvertent ways, which at school, a lot of the janitors and lunch ladies were Portuguese immigrants.
Really?
Yeah. Which honestly makes a lot of sense because there is a Portuguese community in Bridgeport. And if you're a woman that's a recent Portuguese immigrant, if you're a guy, you worked construction. But if you're a woman, the very stereotypical job you would be lunch lady, or would be like lunch lady or cleaning lady. So I mean, I should have expected it, but I was like kind of blown away when I first started, because I was like, you know, I was in the school cafeteria, I was like paying for lunch, and I just see I hear one time I hear one of the ladies speaking Portuguese on the phone, and I was in line, and I go like, you know, in Portuguese, like es português, are you Portuguese? And like she like lit up, and she was like, yeah, like you're Portuguese too, like, you know, and I was like, yeah, like I know Portuguese because my father, and I'm from Newark. And I had like some really fun interactions, cause they were like very parochial, like as in like they had it, they really haven't left this kind of like air part of Connecticut much, but she was like, oh, Newark, I heard there's good Portuguese restaurants down there. And I believe it was somebody else went like, when I was going to Newark Airport, which makes sense cause TAP, a Portugal airline, Portugal's like, semi-private, semi-public airline, flies into, it's one of their hubs is Newark Airport. So they were driving down to Newark to go to Portugal, and they were like, oh, we passed by Newark to get some food and stuff. And it was really interesting, because I was talking to them about where they're like from in Portugal, and I was actually really surprised that it's kind of a separate community, like separate population. Like, in Newark, they're mainly from the north. I was talking with the kind of the cleaning ladies and the lunch ladies at school, and they were like, "Oh, we're all from the outskirts of Lisbon," and I had no clue. I'd never really met that kind of population of Portuguese people before.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and they were like, I asked them the classic questions like. Like, are you planning on going back when you retire? Which is like the classic Portuguese question. And yeah, she was like, yeah, like I'm like, you'd always be like, oh, I'm this close from retirement or whatever. And it's like, I was just visiting Portugal. I was just, and they would always see the town outside of Lisbon, but I'm not from that port. So I'd be like, oh, I'm not sure. But yeah, I would have very interesting. So I had a very interesting relationship with the cleaning ladies and the lunch lady. Like one time, this was freshman year in college. So there was like a party in one of the halls, and we had just made an absolute mess. Like we just absolutely wrecked. Like some like hall,
as is typical.
Yeah, I mean it's like freshman year in college or whatever. And I actually go up to the cleaning ladies and I was like, oh, like, but this is all in Portuguese, like desculpa, like sorry. It's like, it was like, and they're like, oh, I understand. Like it was like very like a, you know, I was like apologizing in Portuguese to the cleaning ladies, and I was like, you know, I was having conversation. Like I would like ended up like really having like a relationship where it's like they would know me and stuff. Like yeah, like Yeah, kind of like a scratch, like you scratch my back, I scratch yours type situation with the lunch ladies and stuff. Like it was really fun. It was it was a really fun situation. It was really funny.
It's great.
And one time I was going to a baptism in Jersey, and I was like, I need a gift. I want to give like a little baptism gift. So, I was like, you know. I hadn't actually ever checked out the Portuguese club in Bridgeport, but I was like, I knew there was a Portuguese club in Bridgeport because I knew that there was a church that had mass in Portuguese. And at this point I had like known about the lunch lady. So it's like, I knew Bridgeport had like kind of an established community. So I was like, let me see if there's a Portuguese like market, like a supermarket or like kind of bodega style like place. Because in North Jersey, there's a bunch of these. There's even a chain of Portuguese supermarkets called Ciabatas. So I was, like, looking around, and I actually found this kind of, like, hole-in-the-wall, like, corner store in, like, kind of, like, southern Bridgeport that, like, you walked in, and it really felt like kind of, like, old world, like, Portuguese emigre. I just felt like, it really felt like I was home. Like, it was crazy. Where it's, like, you walk in, everything was in Portuguese. They had, like, Portuguese news on, like, a tiny little, like clear TV from, like, 30 years ago. There was, like, a little, thing with, like, salted cod that you can buy. It had, like, all the imported Portuguese goods and all that stuff. And it had like big Fatima statues in the window. So but like that's exactly what I wanted. I was like looking for like a saint statue to buy for the baptism. So I like went there to buy some.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then I went up and I like, you know, ordered in Portuguese and stuff, and I kind of had like a little like kind of like mini conversation with the attendant, like this, you know, the cashierist or whatever.
That's
so that was really, I forget the name of the place. I forget the name of the place, but it was really interesting going.
A little slice of Portugal right here in Bridgeport.
Yeah. Yeah. It even felt like a little slice of Newark in Portugal. Yeah. Cause it just reminded me of all like the Portuguese American kind of like little footholds in these areas.
Yeah. There's a lot I didn't really notice until like a couple years back. There's quite a few like little Portuguese community like dotted around.
Yeah.
So I know you kind of answered this with like the northern or southerner thing, but like did you see any sort of differences in the community here versus the community in Newark?
I think it's a smaller community. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think it's always harder to kind of preserve stuff when it's a smaller community, but it does seem like they're from around, they're not like, it's, it really did seem like they were similar, a similar type of immigrant community in the sense that they came around the same time. And I think they were part of the same wave, which is very different from the rest of New England. Cause, further up in Connecticut, once you start getting to like Mystic, towards Rhode Island, mm-hmm. and then in Rhode Island and in southern Massachusetts,
right.
it's all Azorians.
Right.
And it's a much older community, like a much, much older community. They came way before the kind of post-revolution and immediately pre-revolution, like work looking for work mainland mm-hmm. immigrants. But and I was expecting when I came up to Bridgeport that they were going to be Azorian. But they actually turned out not to be Azorian. It was like that was further north. Mm-hmm. So actually, they were a lot more similar than I thought they were going to be. A lot, kind of from the Lisbon area, but still very similar. Like as in, I immediately recognized the type of like kind of like older like working class. Like now kind of getting into their like retirement age, a lot of them going back to Portugal. And I can only imagine like the sons are very similar, like as in like now they're kind of getting into like professional jobs and kind of suburbanizing and all that stuff. Probably a lot of them probably losing connection to the kind of the Portuguese heritage and all that stuff, mm-hmm. you know, as American suburbanization and kind of like assimilation does to like any population.
Right.
But of course, it's much it happens much quicker for Portuguese, for Portuguese America, for like Portuguese people, because you're much more easily able to like, I mean, there's already like a fast track, for assimilation and American and suburbanization, because you're a white ethnic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of fast tracked into white American suburbia, you know, yeah. in a way that it's, you know, a lot of like Hispanic Americans are doing the same thing, but it takes a lot longer mm-hmm. for them. And kind of a way of life that isn't available to a lot of African Americans,
right.
Like purposely cut off from that
yeah.
type of life. So for better or for worse, I mean, for better because they end up like living much more comfortable lives, but worse because they actually end up losing a lot of what makes them Portuguese and what makes them different than other Americans. There is kind of a fast track to kind of like nondescript suburbanization for a lot of like Portuguese immigrants. So, and I mean, I saw that kind of like that same situation also with the Portuguese community as well.
Yeah.
In Bridgeport.
Okay. So did you celebrate did you celebrate Portugal Day here at all, or?
Sadly, whenever it was like kind of like the big like Portugal Day stuff, my family they work the Portugal Day at the Portuguese club that my family's a part of. So I'd always go down for that. And I would always try to go down for like, yeah. So that would be Harrison's Portugal Day.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison, New Jersey's Portugal Day. And I would always try to go down for like for Newark or Harrison's Portugal Day. So sadly, I wasn't able to get to any of the Portugal Days in Bridgeport, which is kind of a regret of mine. I did find out I heard a story of the priest that I served under. They would always go to the Portuguese parish for confession.
Really?
Yeah, I remember that. But yeah, never the Portugal Day, sadly.
Yeah, I don't think we have one that's as big as the one you.
Yeah, kind of like street parade and all that stuff.
Yeah. I think we have a flag raising ceremony. I don't know about.
Yeah,
yeah. I know. I remember the one you took me down to, which was very
yeah, like a whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. Actually, on the subject of the Catholic Church and the priests you serve under, so you did. I'll just read this verbatim. You mentioned previously that you were a server at was it a couple Catholic churches or one or.
I mainly served at one church, but I kind of served around a bunch,
mm-hmm.
At all a bunch of different places. So I served mainly with St. Cyril and Methodius, on the east side, right next to the train tracks. So actually during Mass, whenever like Amtrak or Metro North would come rolling by, it would just shake everything in the church.
Oh.
Like you'd hear like everything like rattling.
Oh.
And stuff.
It's like the wrath of God.
Yeah. And I mean, I have some like really really kind of cherished memories of like even serving like a weekday Mass where it's like six something in the morning. It's winter, and it's a very poor. It was a very poor church, and they were like trying to fix it up. So it was very cold. It was like very, very cold, where you like saw your breath in the church. But like I love that. Like that was like it was, you know, very quiet. You like see your breath in the church. Everything kind of like little whispers and stuff. And just like the only thing you'd hear occasionally is just like the train pass by. That would like just rattle the like kind of like the statuary with the candles and all that. It was like it was very wholesome. It was like I have very, very fond memories of getting to like early morning Mass, like serving early morning Mass there. where, you know, I put on the cassock and surplus and it, like, smell like incense and stuff. And it like, very kind of, like, very, very vivid, like, sensory memories of that kind of stuff. But I had known a bunch of people in kind of, like, the Catholic circles. And I, like, kind of, fell into the Catholic circles in southern Connecticut. So I had kind of served Mass a bunch all around for there, for, like, usually for events. Whenever like other places needed people. So I'd served at the cathedral in Bridgeport, I'd served a confirmation with Bishop Caggiano and all that stuff. I had served as a, for the chapel sometimes, like the midday Mass at the chapel at Sacred Heart, actually. I mean, serve in the sense that, like, I'd just be the guy that rang the bell. They just needed somebody who knew when to ring the bell or whatever. but I really love that. I mean, it's, like, kind of, like, a radically different type of Mass.
Right.
But it like, it had that same kind of, like very humble, very down-to-earth that I really loved. Very private, very nice. At St. Patrick's, right next to the highway, right off of Main Street as well, mm-hmm. Main Street as well. I had served there as well, and then some places in like Fairfield, and Norwalk and stuff as well.
Okay, so you're very active.
Yeah. And of the people that I still. That, like, from at least my, like, roommate and stuff from college, I don't really talk to much anymore. But funnily enough, of the people I still talk to from Connecticut, it's actually people I met through that rather than school. Yeah. I mean, through college, there's still people I, like, kind of, like, I'll, like, catch up with on, like, Instagram or whatever.
Right.
When it's, like, you know, they got married, so I'm, like, oh, congratulations. Like, and they're, like, oh, Michael, like, how have you been or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But of the people that I, like, I've met up with and talked with and stuff, it was actually through those circles. A guy that lives actually right in Stamford who used to go to Mass at St. Cyril Methodius.
Oh.
But yeah, that's kind of like through those circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Catholic friendship. You and I became friends through the
church. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's God-ordained friendships.
Yeah, providential.
Providential, exactly. So I'm assuming you had really good experiences with the religious communities there, right, in Diocese of Bridgeport?
Yeah. I mean, like, kind of very different. I had a good amount of interactions with, like, kind of very different types of like, Catholic communities. I mean, there were, like, the kind of, like, there were the kind of, like, right-wing trads southwestern Connecticut. That I had interacted with, and of course they're psychotic in their own ways, but like also just kind of like the normal, just kind of like suburban or like normal like just like normal Catholic going,
right?
Like just people from the area.
Yeah. Novus Ordo, just
wanna. Yeah, just normal. Yeah. Which I really nice. Like very like. Also, just kind of some characters, some, like, really interesting characters. Like, there was a Syrian emigre who went to the Antiochian Orthodox Church that's, like, right at the end of, it's a Madison Ave, I think, right at the end of... No, Park Ave. Right at the end of Park Ave, right before the entrance onto Merritt, there's the Antiochian Orthodox Church, which they do like a yearly a Middle East festival, like Middle Eastern food festival and stuff.
Oh.
Right next to the university, right next to Sacred Heart. And I think I'm not sure if that's actually like, it still might technically be Bridgeport, but it's like right on the border between Bridgeport and Trumbull. But, he had, I mean, which is very, like, kind of, very, very Middle Eastern Christian. He seemed to kind of dabble both in like the Orthodox and Catholic world.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I saw him at Mass, and I like had a conversation with him at the coffee hour after Mass, and he was like, I was like talking to, this was like during the Syrian civil war. And I was like having conversations to him about like, you know, like where he stood on the Syrian civil war and stuff. But this is like stuff that he prompted, you know, but like really interesting conversations. And of course there was like conversations about like Russia and like kind of like, cause it was during the Syrian civil war and stuff. So like very interesting, kind of like interesting characters. I met a Portuguese guy who was a fisherman, like a Portuguese fisherman, like classic Azorean, right. but he wasn't Azorean. He had he did the classic Portuguese Azorean thing, but I believe he was actually from the area around Lisbon, as well. And he was a local fisherman.
Really?
Which was really cool. He like owned the boat, did like the classic like fisherman stuff.
Oh,
which was like really interesting, really really interesting.
That's awesome. A Portuguese sailor here in Connecticut.
Yeah. That's cool. Which I was learning that kind of the Southern Connecticut population was a lot like the North Jersey population, which they most like sailing wasn't their thing, you know. Mm. I was like really pleasant, like it was kind of a surprise to like meet a like Connecticut Portuguese sailor, you know, like you know, which you'd find more in like Mystic than in Bridgeport.
Yeah. No, definitely. So, did you do anything for fun while you were in Bridgeport? Hobbies?
Yeah. I mean, I would drive around a lot. Like me and friends would drive around. We would hike. Mm. And then we would like drive around find cool stuff in the area. We would always go to that park in Fairfield. That it's right next to Sacred Heart, but it's like on the Fairfield side. That it's where that stream cuts through, and there's like a little bit of a rapids. It's like kind of a rock lined rapids. I forget the name of the park, but it's in it's like right in Fairfield, like right near the border. Lake Mohegan.
Oh yeah.
That's a great. Yeah. I love that. I love that park. Like Mill River.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah.
We'd go to the beach all the time. I mean, we'd go to like you know downtown Fairfield for like food and stuff sometimes. Like I mean, like the classic like kind of like local stuff. Yeah. We would like a lot of hiking and stuff. I went up to New Haven a couple times for. Just kind of like check it out. I liked Bridgeport more than I liked New Haven. Mm-hmm. Like almost universally, I liked Bridgeport more than I liked New Haven. But yeah. So kind of that kind of stuff. I mean, like kind of also just some kind of like classic college stuff. You know.
Yeah.
You know, just like go to parks and stuff, hang out.
Yeah. Shoot the breeze.
Yeah.
Typical college experience. Okay, a final question. So, a Bridgeport for all seasons. So, tell us about your experience with the Bridgeport snowstorm.
Oh yeah, so this was in 2019. It's like really the last big snowstorm that I remember, just kind of in the Northeast at all, because the kind of like big like more than a foot snowstorms feel like they don't really happen anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was 2016. It was winter. I forget whether it's before the semester started. I mean before. My first semester ended, or because I started in 2016 was my freshman year, or right when the semester began. Oh, when I got back from Christmas break, but at that point I was in Roncalli Hall, which is like down Madison Ave, but like a good walk to main campus. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like, if I remember correctly, this was like. Kind of unexpectedly big snowstorm, whereas like I think it was like it was worse than they thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So I remember it's like started snowing the day before, and they like canceled classes for the next like 2 days, which is great. But then we wake up the next morning, and it's like we don't have food on us. There's more than a foot of snow on everywhere around us, so we can't order food. There's nothing like directly next to, because it's like right below Roncalli Hall was the is the golf, frisbee golf field or whatever. On the other side is the golf course, and then north is just university stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's no food nearby, and we can't order food. So I remember we wake up in the morning and it's just blizzard outside. Like, it's just windy, and they were like, it was still happening. So they weren't even plowing the streets. So it's like, oh, so it's like, we can't order anything. And they haven't even started plowing the streets. So it was like, we're going to have to walk the 30 minutes to main campus to get food, right? Because there's like no other way of us getting food. So we were like, oh shit. But it was like so much fun. Oh, yeah. So like we were like, we all put on all of our like just basically like all the clothes we had. And we just trekked out. It was like me and my two other roommates. And I was like very close with my two roommates. Well, there was like a third roommate that I wasn't very close with. But us three. We're all bundled up. And we just kind of trekked through what I remember this vividly, where we're walking down Madison Ave, like in the middle of the street, completely unplowed, no cars at all, and we're just kind of like just trudging through snow, like just walking, like just pushing snow in front of us, just like shuffling through the snow, like in the middle of Madison Avenue, just like for like 20 minutes, just going down Madison Avenue to get to the main campus. And it was just so much fun. Like, it was like, you know, it was like stuff I remember like as a kid. Like, we hadn't had a snowstorm like that in forever, it felt like. And it was just like, I remember we were getting into the campus, and we just made it to the food hall, and it was like the food hall was just so warm. And we were so wet. We're like, just everything was wet. I had a big one of those like kind of like Russian hats with the flaps. Yeah, and like I just remember that being like just coated in snow.
Oh my gosh, so you were like a Siberian
explorer. Yeah, just like all like the fur was just had like just snow caked on it and stuff. And we just sat down, just had like a shitload of food and just like absolute garbage. Like, I mean, because this is just like cafeteria food, so it's just like pizza and burgers and stuff.
Oh, well deserved.
The cafeteria food never tasted so good. Yeah. And we were just so warm. We were like toasty. Like everything around us was wet, just because it was just melt. Like all the snow was just melting, and it was packed. The food, like the cafeteria, was just packed with people because there was just nowhere else to eat. Mm-hmm. And people were just there just to like hang out and just like be somewhere warm with other people. So it was like really nice. Yeah. It was really, really nice. We just stayed for as long as we could before we like kind of trekked back. And if I remember correctly, at this point, it was kind of like night.
Oh.
But it was crazy because it was in the middle of the snowstorm. So it, like when we walked there, it was, even though it was in the middle of the day, it was like morning. It was around lunchtime. So it was like midday, but like it was still kind of dark out just because of like how bad it was. But like by night, I think it kind of died down a little bit, and they actually had started plowing the streets and stuff. So the walk back was much easier. But that was so much fun. Like, that was such a fun experience. Was like just walking down a wide ass, like the what, yeah. Madison Avenue, that is like two lanes, divider, two, like not a divider, but you know, dividing the solid dash line, two lanes, so four lane road, kind of strode. and just walking down the middle of that in the middle of a blizzard. It was just, like, so much fun. I have a lot of... That was really the last, like, big snow event. Like foot-plus snow event that I remember. But I do have a lot of, like, fond memories of, like, of it being, like, late December. And we'd have one of those things where it would flurry. It would be, like, end of the day and, like, flurry a little bit. Like, stuff that would, like, you know, if it weren't grass, it would, like, melt immediately. And even on the grass, it'll, like, it's sticked for, like, a couple minutes and then it would just go away. You know, kind of non-event. But, like, I remember getting out of classes and it was freezing and just kind of, like, putting a big coat on. And it's, like, kind of nightish. And just walking around campus and it's just, like, snowing and stuff. And it, like, that was, like, the most, like, oh, it's, like, winter kind of, like, vivid memories of, like, oh, it's, like, winter and stuff. I have, like, very fond memories of that. Of kind of, like, winter in Bridgeport.
That's great.
Yeah, I really love that. Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Michael.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. This is
really...
I'm just glad to be back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have any closing thoughts on the city?
I wish it all the best.